and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, June 10th. I'm Jordan Pangilinan, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt Dockside Market, opening weekend turnout. Shelter Cove Port opens for salmon fishing after a two-year hiatus. And Humboldt's Firefighting Emergency Services summarized in report. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. KMUD News attended the Humboldt Dockside Market on the first weekend opening on June 7th. The Dockside Market is a direct-to-consumer pop-up market that mimics the structure of a farmer's market. KMUD News spoke to Megan Kenny, the Harvest Hub Director at the North Coast Growers Association, to learn more about their partnership with the Dockside Market.
Yes, today was our opening day of the Dockside Market, so we have a sort of mobile commercial kitchen space that we're using as a fish fillet station. So we set that up. We had a fishing vessel here selling fish. So customers were buying whole fish. They would bring them over to us and ask us to fillet them or just gut and gill them, whatever they wanted. So then we could collect all the fish waste and they could take home whatever they wanted to.
Just opening at 9 a.m., they sold out by 9:30. This was primarily due to harsh winds on the water and only one fishing vessel that was able to catch or sell that morning.
Yes, we were sold out. We started at 9. They were sold out by around 9:30. But that's primarily just because the seas this entire week were super rough, very windy out there. So we didn't want to put any of the fishing vessels at risk, you know, by having them go out.
The Dockside Market is still happening every other Friday until the season is over. They're excited to invite more fishermen and see how much more this event will grow.
I'm definitely excited for more fish. I think just with the success of this market, all the customers were really supportive, even if they weren't able to get any fish. So just to see how much the community really values and supports this effort, we're really excited to see them all back next or 2 weeks from now.
For more information, visit northcoastgrowersassociation.org, and under the Farmers Market tab, you will be able to find more information about the next Dockside Market. The Recreational Ocean Salmon Fishery opened this last weekend for 2 days after a two-year hiatus. Salmon population of Sacramento and Klamath Chinook are well below average. However, there is still potential for a king catch based on return numbers of other Chinook last fall. Since numbers are low, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife implemented a state quota of 7,000 Chinook in the opening weekend of June 7th through June 8th. If the quota isn't reached this summer season, it will reopen statewide July 5th through 6th, July 31st through August 3rd, and August 25th through the 31st, or until harvest guidelines are reached. Jared Morris, the owner of Come On Sport Fishing, a charter company in Shelter Cove, spoke to KMUD News about their experience out in the water for the first time in 3 years.
Today was our first two-day season in 3 years for salmon, and it was horrible. I think there was pushing 100 boats, you know, and speaking is like, what, there's seven fish now. Look at what happened in San Francisco today. Every boat was limited out before 9 o'clock. You're talking 30 people on one boat that had limits of fish before nine. So like, our quota is gone. San Francisco, they from San Francisco down through Monterey absolutely murdered fish.
The CDFW were to hire staff and monitor vessels returning to launch and dock sites to collect and catch information and coded wire tag data that is essential to managing California salmon fisheries. Morris, however, had a different experience.
You know, Shelter Cove was the biggest port, I guess, or launches, I guess, from Fort Bragg didn't have barely, you know, just normal. Eureka, they had like 20 to 30 per place. Crescent City was locals, and even Trinidad was as many locals. A local fishing game said there was 60 launches plus almost 30 self launches, and then not including the kayaks. So Shelter Cove was the busiest port from Oregon to basically Point Arena. We were the busiest and had the worst success.
Morris doesn't believe it is possible for reopening of another season due to the lack of tracking on fishermen's catches. Morris also believes that this didn't help any local businesses. It was a, quote, money grab.
I mean, they're saying we could have it in July. You know, we get 2 days in July, but I don't think that's going to be possible with what's happening, obviously, down south. I mean, if boats are pulling 75 fish a day per one boat, how many charter boats are down there that are taking 30 people out? So it's a money grab. It's a money grab. I mean, honestly, I don't think this is benefiting anybody. This is just, I feel like this is deterring them from, like, paying or compensate or whatever, I don't know the proper term of giving, so say my charter business or these commercial people, the kickbacks or whatever, you know what I mean? The kickbacks that we should get for not being able to fish. We pay for our licenses, we do all this stuff to fish for them, but if we can't fish for them, they reimburse us. So I feel like they did this in spite. How can they give us a season when the last 2 years have had better runs than this year? This year had worse runs than the last 2 years it's been closed. Why would you open it? Why would you open it? You know? And I feel like it's kind of their money grab. Resell, buy. Look, it's there. We've never had over 60 launches in Shelter Cove, and today it was a madhouse, you know? Great, we made a bunch of money for Shelter Cove Fishing Corporation to the launch surface, but 2 days, whoopity-doo. That's not doing any good for anybody. I've had to answer 1,000 phone calls to tell them we got a 2-day season. No, we don't have a salmon season. We got 2 days to go float around and look for a fish. Like, unlike San Francisco, they put the gear in the water and they're done before no time. You know, like, the fish are there. This isn't the right time for us.
Morris thinks salmon fishing should stay closed as they're not ready, the fish or the fishermen. Fishermen are not being thought of when it comes to deciding these types of events, Morris says.
I'm boom for my company. 2 days, it's not like I was offering lottery tickets or trying to freaking, you know, jack my rates up to take people salmon fishing. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, $600 a pole, you can come fishing for salmon. You know, I heard the people in the Bay Area, they jacked the prices to $250 just to go salmon when it was like, you know, they jacked it way up. They started just for these 2 days, you know. They didn't do anybody any good. I've answered thousands of phone calls just to tell people there's 2 days. I'm sorry, I'm booked. It didn't do anybody any good. Some places made a good little bucket of money. It's tractor service. They did excellent. Good job. They did great. You know what I mean? But I didn't make anything extra because we went salmon fishing. I didn't catch any salmon. If it was extra, I mean, catching salmon is extra, but there's no extra coming from this at all. This is them not having to freaking pay us again, because we're supposed to be compensated. I mean, I'm supposed to been having a, we're supposed to be as charter fishing, Jake, myself, even commercial salmon fishing my personal salmon boat. We're supposed to have checks coming to us. It's been supposed to be coming for a couple of years, and we're keeping our fingers crossed that it actually comes, you know? So I feel like they just did this to not have to pay people.
KMUD News will update on the story when there is an announcement of reopening or closure for the season salmon fishing. A report on Humboldt County's firefighting and emergency services details thousands of responses and volunteer hours. Daniel Mintz reports.
The Humboldt County Fire Chiefs Association has presented an annual report to the Board of Supervisors, including breakdowns of emergency incident responses, volunteer hours, and the challenges and needs of local departments. Supervisors were briefed on firefighting and emergency response services at their June 3rd meeting. Telegraph Ridge Volunteer Fire Department Chief Tanner Spees, the association's incoming president, summarized statistics on calls for service in 2023, the year covered in the report.
You can see there's 18,561 calls for service, right? And that represented 16,280 that were emergency responses. So that's 2 calls an hour every single hour of every single day of the year, right? And all of these calls are coming from our residents, Humboldt County residents, or visitors And they're coming in intense moments of need, of potentially fear and pain, and looking for emergency help. And so our responders are oftentimes the first ones they see when they get there. And this is why we must continually push for excellence in our emergency services, right? We ask ourselves, what kind of service would we want if it was a family member calling for help?
Volunteers account for much of the work of the county's fire departments. Volunteer recruitment and retention is one of the primary challenges faced by local volunteer fire departments. Spees described the county's high volume of volunteer work, but said it's at a peak level and a shift to paid firefighting is in the works.
We do calculate our volunteer hours, and there were 98,041 volunteer hours. This is coming from the actual incident hours, the training hours, the maintenance hours, and the fundraising hours. And we have even been collecting the administrative hours, which we plan to this year. This represents at the rate of a firefighter, the standard firefighter rate and volunteer hour, to $4,143,212. Over the last few years, we've been collecting these metrics. We have continuously gotten over $4 million. If you were to look at this like match contribution, you know, to the Measure Z funding, that's representing about a 200% match contribution, which is pretty significant. So these are volunteer hours, and this is a great gift that our residents are giving to Humboldt County. But we should also not take that for granted, and we have to recognize that we're probably pretty much maxing out on how much we can ask people to volunteer in Humboldt County for this. And we do see that there's a good chance for basically the evolution of fire services in Humboldt County to move towards a stronger combination element of both volunteerism and professionalism. And we think that this could solve some of the challenges and needs we're facing.
The report says a, quote, shrinking roster of firefighters makes it difficult to maintain current levels of service, with, quote, ever-increasing training and performance demand on volunteers and increasing call amounts that, quote, put volunteers in dangerous situations, threatening their physical safety and mental health. Those challenges are, quote, exacerbated by the fact that significant developed and populated areas of the county are located outside the boundaries of any fire-related district. Spees is a member of the Humboldt County Fire Services Planning Team, which is working on expanding fire district boundaries and consolidating districts. He's replacing outgoing Association President Rick Nicholson, who is Ferndale's volunteer fire department chief. Board Chair Michelle Bushnell acknowledged the importance of emergency services in her rural Southern Humboldt District and the community's support for them.
Volunteer fire departments are really foundations of communities, and especially in the very rural areas. I'll reference to Telegraph and Alder Point and Shelter Cove in my district that are very rural, and Bridgeville. Those departments are not only offering their services for medical and fire, but they also do community events, and really the community rallies around those volunteer departments, where most of the time in Alder Point, there's a post office and a fire department. And so they're super important to the community. I really thank the taxpayers for Measure Z and the continued funds that come in for Measure Z. We wouldn't have Sabell doing all that work without Measure Z, or Tanner without Measure Z, and all of the upgrades that have happened within the fire department.
The report notes the Garberville Fire Protection District's recent district boundary expansions, which take in what was previously considered as an out-of-district goodwill area. And Nicholson said efforts are ongoing to, quote, get rid of some of those areas and annex them into the districts. Also afoot is planning for creation of a firefighting and emergency services joint powers authority. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In state news, activists urge Oakland Mayor Lee to prioritize social services as she deals with city deficit. KPFA's Kennedy Cuello reports.
We must love each other and support each other.
We must love each other and support each other.
We have nothing to lose but our change.
The activists are urging new Oakland Mayor Barbara Lee to consider prioritizing funding for programs and services that benefit Oakland's neediest residents. However, Lee must deal with the city's projected $270 million budget deficit over the next 2 years. Kat Brooks is with the Anti-Police Terror Project and host of KPFA's Law and Disorder program. She's calling on the city to cut funding from the police in the next budget and says it should focus more on justice, healing, and jobs. She specifically calls for accountability in the Oakland Police Department, saying they are responsible for much of the city's debt as their funding keeps increasing with nothing to show for it. Currently, the Oakland Police budget is $364 million.
We warned that if we continue to pour all of our money into the failed system of policing and taking the dollars to do so away from the social safety net, that A, we would not be any safer and in fact would likely be worse off, and B, it would bankrupt our city. Well, 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 look at where we are. Crisis in our streets and bankruptcy in our city, and still we are being gaslit and told that if we do this just one more time, if we do it just one more time, if we fund the cops one more time and not the people, that things will be better. It's not true, and we stand here in rejection of that lie.
Community activist Nita B is with the Homeless Advocates Working Group. She says that the sweeps of homeless encampments has contributed to the deficit. She says this goes back to an executive order from recalled Mayor Sheng Tao that allowed for multiple encampment sweeps per day. B says these sweeps cost the city $1,800 an hour, not including overtime. She says that money should be redirected to the community.
The sweeps are not solving or ending homelessness. They're making the unhoused disappear from the public eye. An overwhelming majority of residents are not being placed in shelters or connected to services, despite what the well-manicured city statements and social media accounts are claiming. The sweeps are driving our unhoused neighbors further into trauma and deeper into desperation just to find food, water, a place to lay their head. The sweeps are not making Oakland safe. In fact, the sweeps are spending millions of dollars to make sure Oakland is unsafe for all of us. The city needs to stop these sweeps immediately, and the millions they're spending on the sweeps should be redirected.
Sasha Ritzi Hernandez is executive director of Somos Familia, or We Are Family. She says the city's diversity shouldn't just be limited to its food and culture, but should be reflected in the city government as well. She says the city owes it to its citizens to take their input on the budget into account.
The voices of those who have been historically marginalized and excluded is pivotal to ensure that the city's budget reflects the priorities and the needs of our communities. From interrupting the school-to-prison pipeline to safe schools and community, this is an emergency. As we have seen thousands of families leaving Oakland because rent is just too high. We demand Oakland does the right thing and includes the voices that of those who are most impacted.
The current budget proposal is being debated by the City Council. The city must adopt a final budget by June 30th. For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy Cuello in Oakland.
Central Valley farmers seeking more water pumping, dams for agriculture. KPFA's Vic Bedoin reports.
By 2040, state law requires California's groundwater basins to be in balance, meaning no more pumping than nature can replace. That's a tough shift for Central Valley farmers who've long relied on overdrafting. The region's water agencies and agricultural leaders aren't waiting to adapt. They're promoting an ambitious plan to bridge the gap, the water blueprint for the San Joaquin Valley. Ron Stork is senior policy advisor for Friends of the River.
The problem with the Valley Blueprint is that it is essentially attempting to increase pumping in the Delta by about 50%. And that water would be dedicated to the east side of the San Joaquin Valley from Madera to Bakersfield.
The water blueprint is ambitious and expensive. It would increase the capacity of the Delta Mendota Canal, build a new canal from the center of the valley to the Fryant service area, increase diversions from larger reservoirs in the North State, build more dams, and increase the size of the state aqueduct in the southern end of the valley. In addition, Stork observes, they would face competition from other water customers. Moreover, the 2 million acre feet of water would come on top of the 4.5 to 6 million acre feet currently exported south from the ecologically stressed delta.
The idea that you can pump a couple million more acre feet out of the delta and not have problems with other water purveyors in other parts of the state, environmental purposes of the projects, it's just unrealistic. There's no way to serve that portion of the valley from the delta. And there never has been.
On its website, the Water Blueprint for the San Joaquin Valley claims to represent the aspirations of the entire region, a claim many see as far-fetched. The group promotes a slate of major water projects across California, from the controversial Delta Tunnel to the proposed Sites Reservoir in Northern California to expanding Shasta Dam and the Pacheco Reservoir. But critics like Stork say even with those projects, the idea of delivering significantly more water to the Eastern Valley is pure fantasy.
Largely that water, what little water those facilities develop, is not going to the Fryant unit of the CVP. It's not going to Fresno. It's not going to Bakersfield. It's going to urban Southern California or urban Bay Area. And maybe some for the West Side agriculture.
Johnny Amaral is chief operating officer of the Fryant Water Authority. He told KPFA News pumping is not the only cause of the Delta's fragile condition. He also insists farmers have already done much to conserve water. Amaral said the state's leaders will ultimately have to decide if the unique qualities of valley agriculture are worth the investment in water and infrastructure.
You know, this central valley, the San Joaquin Valley, is one of five Mediterranean climates in the world, which means this is a perfect climate for growing things. We also happen to have great soils throughout the central valley, which is in essence a bowl. And all you need to do is add water, and you have a perfect growing machine. You can grow within the San Joaquin Valley, about 350 different crops grown here. I mean, it's remarkable what can be done here.
But Ron Stork says valley farming can't continue as it has in the past, and that valley leaders are wasting their political resources and energies by not confronting real solutions to the practical problems that exist in the San Joaquin Valley. He remains hopeful that valley residents will adapt to changing conditions.
I'm cautiously optimistic that in the long run, people in the valley are going to develop a new appreciation for the environment that has been bestowed upon them of, you know, living below the Sierra Nevada, those magnificent mountains with its magnificent rivers. You know, it's my hope that there begins to be a new ethos, a new perspective on the part of valley residents that's not so dominated by the agricultural sector and the agricultural sector's agenda of trying to use more water than the Lord has bestowed upon them.
The San Joaquin Valley Water Blueprint is part of a larger effort by California's leadership for a water plan that can resolve all the conflicts between users. That's a tall order when demand exceeds supply, and the supply depends on a changing climate. Vic Bedoyan reporting for KPFA News and KFCF Radio.
In national news, Dems blast Trump, mass deportations, activists plan nationwide mobilization on June 14th. KPFA's Christina Anastad reports.
What is happening, in my view, is just sinister, cruel, and inhumane.
Texas Representative Democrat Sylvia Garcia, a one-time judge and attorney, says she was among a delegation of Democrats to inspect an immigrant detention facility in Houston recently. She said the official she spoke with estimates a tiny fraction of the immigrants detained there are the rapists and murderers President Donald Trump says they're going after.
10 out of 800 are the people that convict in the White House talked about during his campaign, mm-hmm. that he would go after the heinous murderers and rapists and killers.
Local immigrant rights advocates echo that's what they're seeing on the ground. 15 people were arrested at ICE check-ins in San Francisco Wednesday, at least four of them children, including a three-year-old. Yaneth, speaking through a translator, says her 25-year-old sister and her sister's two children were among those detained, even though she was complying with the courts.
No sé por qué detienen hasta a los niños.
I don't know why they detain even the children, making them sleep on the floor, in the cold, hungry. It is an injustice what they're doing, and I don't know why they do that to the children. My sister is a good person. There are supposed to be rules for children. They're not supposed to have to suffer cold, hunger, sleeping on the floor. To me, this is wrong. My sister was complying with what immigration said. The fact that they let this happen is wrong, and I'm asking for justice and for something to be done.
Pido justicia que se haga algo por los niños.
Advocates estimate about 100 people came together for an emergency protest. They told KPFA the family is being sent to a detention center in Texas. Other arrestees were sent to Golden State Annex in the Central Valley. Others, their whereabouts, unknown. And in Livermore, upwards of 300 residents rallied Wednesday in support of a resident who was arrested by ICE agents after showing up for his immigration court hearing, something his wife says Miguel Angel Lopez has done every year for the last 17 years. He has three American-born children and has lived in the country for 27 years. But he also has a DUI conviction, which a hard-line Trump administration may use as a reason to deport him. Millie Atkinson with the Justice and Diversity Center says the vast majority of immigrants caught up in raids under the Trump administration are complying with immigration laws.
These are individuals who are trying to comply with the rules, trying to seek asylum, and in a lot of cases willing to make travel arrangements for themselves and their families rather than be detained if they are unsuccessful in their claim. So we are just concerned because we know when people are detained, they're more likely to give up their rights, especially for individuals with children with them. They do not want their children in that traumatic experience.
She suggests ramped up immigration enforcement on people complying with the court is a result of the Trump administration's new quota system, detailed by Stephen Miller this past weekend on Fox News.
Under President Trump's leadership, we are looking to set a goal of a minimum of 3,000 arrests for ICE every day. And President Trump is going to keep pushing to get that number up higher each and every single day so we can get all of the Biden illegals that were flooded into our country for 4 years out of our country. And we can't take the risk of letting these Biden illegals roam around freely so that the next American daughter can get raped, the next American kid can get murdered, the next American family can get splintered and torn apart by people that came into this country unchecked, uncontrolled, unvetted, uninvited by the American people.
On Capitol Hill, Democrats on the congressional Democrats with the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, like Sylvia Garcia, slam the tactics being used by immigration agents to meet this quota.
This administration has shown an abject contempt for the Constitution. They have twisted the Department of Homeland Security into a secret police force to terrorize immigrants, and in many cases, U.S. citizens as well. They are wearing masks and ambushing people. Republicans told the American people that immigration enforcement would target dangerous individuals. They're rapists, the murderers, they're drug dealers, the cartel. They would go on and on about all of these heinous crimes. But that is not the case that we're finding.
Critics say it's just causing fear in the immigrant community, meaning less people will be likely to show up for their court hearings or reach out to law enforcement should they be a victim of a crime. Advocates are planning a nationwide mobilization June 14th to protest the Trump administration's raids of immigrant communities. I'm Christina Onnestad reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
For tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Kennedy Cuello, Vic Bedoin, and Christina Anastad. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.